On our morning session, we'll bring on some community conversation, talk about some streets and some construction in Richland Center, and with the water utility and sewer utilities coming up here during our morning show time, plus a little bit different setup for the upcoming Memorial Day parade. That's up on the morning show community conversation today. Our news update at 9 on FM 100.9 WRCO in Richland Center is sponsored by Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, continuing the long tradition of caring service to area families, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Heavy fighting taking place between Israeli troops and Palestinian militants on the outskirts of the southern Gaza city of Rafah. It has left crossings inaccessible, meaning aid cannot get in. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, meantime, saying his country will fight it alone if it has to, after President Biden announced that offensive weapons would not be sent in if a widespread invasion of Rafah takes place. The focus in Donald Trump's hush money trial today returns to the paper trail that prosecutors say proved Donald Trump falsified business records. That following Stormy Daniels' cross-examination by defense attorney Susan Necklace's examination on Thursday.
Necklace noted Daniels spent 20 years working in sex films. So you have a lot of experience in making phony stories about sex appear to be real, right? Daniels having none of it. The sex in the films, it's very much real, just like what happened to me in that room.
ABC senior investigative correspondent Aaron Katursky. This is ABC News. The Postal Service facing pushback over its plan to consolidate processing and delivery operations. A bipartisan group of senators warning that the move, along with cuts to mail collection, could slow deliveries and cause critical delays in what's supposed to be overnight mail. In one case, mail in Michigan will be rerouted to Green Bay, Wisconsin, 100 miles away. The Senate is calling for a review. Time's 100 Most Influential People of 2024 includes Oscar-nominated actor Dev Patel. He says he can't remember if anyone ever told him he was an inspiration.
Those wonderful positive comments kind of like don't sit as long as the negative ones do, which is a sad truth of how I'm wired as a human. But, you know, this is incredible.
Time 100, the world's most influential people, airs on ABC this Sunday. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex, Harry and Meghan, are in Nigeria visiting a school that their charity supports, the African country hoping to host the Invictus Games in 2029. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
The best place to catch a Friday night fish dinner is the Phoenix Center. Dine in or carry out delicious deep-fried or baked fish. The Phoenix Center serves food and fun every day. The pizza is out of this world. And after a great meal, make it an even better night with a game of bowling. The Phoenix Center is family fun at its best. Open at 10 Monday through Sunday. The Phoenix Center, the area's go-to spot for good times and great food.
The Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been serving the Southwest Wisconsin area since 1889. We pride ourselves on doing things the right way, paying attention to even the smallest details, and assisting your family every step of the way in your time of need. I'm Mark Jelenic. I am proud the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service still represents the values that have helped us be trusted and depended on for many generations. Learn more at PrattFuneralService.com.
A high of around 70 today, sunny and seasonal with scattered showers possible tonight, a low of 44. Saturday, partly cloudy and breezy, a high of 69. And Sunday, 79 with a 50% chance of showers by evening. In Richland Center Country this morning, after a very foggy start to the day, down to 45 for a low. We're up from that with sunshine. It is 52 degrees.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Hi, this is Julie Cairns with State Farm. Like a good neighbor is not just a corporate slogan or a catchy jingle. It's much more than that. It's how we try to encapsulate the enormous amount of heart and soul that drives our business. It's a title to a story that started over 100 years ago. At Julie Cairns State Farm, we're about relationships, not transactions. We participate in the lives of our customers and community. We are invited to help you with the things that matter most. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
WRCO Studios, proudly sponsored by the Richland Family Restaurant. Fill up with something delicious.
On our morning show from WRCO Radio, we have a couple of guests in here. We were able to pry them away from their busy schedule, and they are busy. Steve Krueger is here. He is joining us to talk a little bit about city utilities. Todd Fisher is here talking from the wastewater aspect here in Richland Center. And, gentlemen, it's a kind of a timely topic here, isn't it, Todd?
Yes, it is. It's getting to be construction season, so we're getting ready to get started. So I thought we'd come on the show with you this morning and let people know what's going to happen.
Right. And so, and we're looking, Steve, too, at some construction coming up here. People are probably a little bit, you know, kind of wondering what's going to happen with the upcoming parades and the rodeo and all of those things, too.
Correct. This will be the third phase of the 7th 8th Street project. And this year, it impacts heavily 8th Street along the cemetery. So there will be some disruptions and traffic pattern modifications throughout the summer.
Can you talk a little bit about that and where traffic's going to be rerouted to and everything?
Sure. The truck route signs on Highway 14 will be covered to not direct people up 8th Street and along the cemetery out County A or AA towards the fairgrounds. That traffic will all be directed north on 80 and across on Industrial Drive to come back in. And then during the project, either the intersection of 8th and Church or 8th and Park will have temporary closures. One of those intersections is subject to always be open for local traffic in the 9th, 10th, 11th Street neighborhoods, but we would encourage those people to consider going around past the fairgrounds for the summer. It will just ease congestion in the neighborhood.
And with the upcoming parades and things like that, the routes are going to change a little bit, aren't they?
Correct. They've already worked with the Memorial Day Parade, and that is going to start and end in some different locations this year. I know you have had guests on, and we'll be talking with Marge Freeman about that, and they're going to utilize the Veterans Pavilion in Crosscut Park this year instead of the area in the cemetery by the cannon. Also, for the rodeo parade, the traffic will be open for that, but it will be in gravel, not blacktop. So it'll be somewhat passable, but there, you know, will be a little bit of disruption to the normal routine there.
So, Steve, when is that? What is the timeline for that as far as start and projected finish and all of that?
Well, our tentative start date was next week, Monday, but we've had a fairly wet spring. So the crew that is coming in, G-Pro, is a little bit delayed in Mazamani where they're at. We have heard that they're going to mobilize midweek next week, start bringing equipment in and start receiving deliveries. And then after that, they'll start stripping blacktop off and getting to work. They have 120 days for the project, so our substantial completion date is towards the end of August, August 30th, and final completion with landscaping and all the restoration is September 27th. So it'll be a most of the summer project.
Okay. Back by, it'll be open probably fully by the time school starts, or that's a projection anyway then.
It should be passable for that and for the county fair.
Very good. Todd, has it been a good last year for everybody at Wastewater?
Yeah, I think everything's gone really smooth over there as far as how things are going personnel-wise and how the operation at the wastewater plant is going. And, of course, as Steve said, this is the third phase. So our project last year was, I guess it was the expensive part for us for the wastewater because we were up on the hillside coming around Cedar Street from 7th to 8th. A lot of rock, deep excavation, so a much more costly phase for the wastewater. This one's a little bit less, so the cost should be down for the wastewater residents that way or wastewater customers. But as far as the city goes, we're just getting into our collection system maintenance right now. So when the weather turns nice and we can get the jet machine out there and we're starting to clean those sewers, we try to get a three-year rotation to get through everything in town. But like always, coming out of the winter time, you have, usually it's tree roots are the problem. But so far this year, we've had four significant backups that are causing problems to our residents, you know, with sewage actually backing up into the basements. And all four of them have been attributed to balls or gobs of disinfecting wipes, whether they're Swiffer wipes or Clorox disinfecting wipes. I guess I just want to remind folks that just because they go to the store and on the front of that label it says flushable, there's a lot of things that are flushable that can go down the toilet when you flush, but they are not treatable. And again, if you look at the heavy weave of that cloth and how that is put together, that does not disintegrate the way toilet paper or things that should go down the sewer. And once it's out there in the main, it can get hung up on anything, and it only takes one little obstruction to get that caught. And then everything's going to get caught on that, and it's just going to keep building and building. So, again, just a real big reminder for people, try to keep that stuff out of the sewer, put it in the garbage, you know, get rid of it that way. It just doesn't belong in the sewer. And even if you're out in the, you know, rural area where you have your own private holding tank, private septic system, again, that stuff's got to get vacked out and taken somewhere. Well, it's getting taken to our treatment plant. So again, it still can have a problem at the treatment plant, even though we do have screening devices and that to take it out.
It's amazing something so simple could cause so many major problems.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, 20 years ago, it was a really big thing that these are, you know, they'd even put right on their septic system safe. You know, well, again, I look at a piece of cloth and again, paper, even like our desktop paper, that'll break down in water over time. And much faster, but these weaves that they're putting into these cloths and towels that are supposed to be disinfecting countertops, your hands, be able to kitchen wipe, those are some pretty sturdy, heavy-duty cloth towels. I don't know how long it would take to actually break down just sitting in a tank, you know. So, again, just a reminder, please don't put that down the sewer. It just causes a lot of problems for not necessarily you, but you're definitely going to affect your neighbors.
Yeah,
you know, if that happens. And it did happen again four times, and it's in all four different neighborhoods. It's not all the same place. So, again, it's happening throughout the city. So we would just ask that you'd continue putting a good effort into not putting that down the drain.
Yeah, good reminder there. So with your work, is it right now kind of a tough part of the city to be working on, or is one tougher than the other?
No, the older part of town is always a little bit different for the sewers because there are a lot of clay tiles still left in the ground, and sometimes you get a little more tree roots and some of that. But I've been here 22 years now, and we've done a street project just about every year I've been here. So we're getting a lot of that older collection system pipe out of the ground. So we're getting new PVC in the ground. We're getting things a lot more sound in our system as far as infiltration and inflow, rainwater, groundwater being able to seep into our system. So it makes the maintenance part of it go much better. And again, I think the West Side Drive project is an example of that. It was a big project, but it got a lot of old pipe out of the ground up on the hillside right along the river. And again, we used to get a lot of sand over there collecting in our lift stations and in our pipes. That's all gone now. So again, we've done a good job, and our, you know, commission has really backed us on making sure we continue to strive to get that stuff done on an annual basis. So it's a little at a time rather than waiting to do a 17 block project like we did on Main Street, you know, years ago. Needed to be done, but man, that was a big project.
I bet. So. You had some public information meetings too, didn't you, recently?
Yeah, we had a public information meeting about the project back in April 23rd, I think it was, and we had good attendance from the public in the area. And as I said to the commission on Wednesday night at our meeting, you know, I think the big thing is doing, I guess, more visible projects like the Hazeltine Seminary, getting the first two phases of this done. There's not real negative impact to the community at all. It's all positive, but they're just not sure how it's going to affect them. Well, now they've been able to see those projects, what the outcome is. It's a summer where you have a little bit of harder time getting your vehicle to your driveway, but once it's done, it's so much nicer that you've got all this to look forward to. It's kind of three months of inconvenience to really have a drastic improvement around your house and in your property.
We wanted to talk to Steve as well about some of the things that have come up recently in the news. PFAS are always in the news. How does that look for Richland Center residents?
Well, it looks really good, Phil. Last April and last October, so we had a six-month separation. We did two rounds of testing from all three municipal wells, and we have zero detects of PFAS in our community. Really good news. I can attribute that to a couple things. One is our industries, the dairy industries, our food grade type industry. We're not using those chemicals that create the PFAS compounds in the environment. And we're not near an airport where the firefighting foam that had been used in the past and used in large quantities for training had the PFAS compounds in them. So we will have ongoing continual testing as required by the DNR in the future, but at this time we have zero detects.
Okay, so the water is treated. Is that how it works before the test is made, or how do you do that?
Well, those tests were a raw groundwater test, so the wells were turned on after a couple hour rest period. We manually ran each well individually and took a sample. Had a lot of safety precautions in that. There were certain types of clothing that I could not wear while I was doing that. Could not have my hands exposed. I had to have a glove that they sent with the test kit that was put on just to make sure that you're eliminating any potential contamination sources. Our wells are 450 feet deep, so we're taking water deep from the aquifer here in the community. And like I say, we have zero detects in our community.
That's great. So you're getting into homes then? Are you doing some of those checks right now too and updating systems?
Correct. So along with our lead and copper rule monitoring, the DNR has us doing a study on what customer side service laterals are coming into your house below the meter. And we've gotten about halfway through the community. We've been looking at that while we've done our routine meter changes, but we have about 1,100 houses that we need to identify what type of pipe material is coming through the floor below the meter, whether it be copper, lead, or galvanized. In the future, there is funding tied to this. So if you have a lead pipe, or if you have galvanized that was previously lead on the utility side that we have replaced in the past, we may be able to help you with funding to replace your side of the water service lateral. So it's important that we identify all these, and we need to have that done by late summer. There's reporting to the DNR that is due mid-October for this.
How do you tell, again, whether yours has been updated or not?
Well, if you just call us, we can, if you're unsure of the pipe type there, call us, and we can certainly come out and take a look for you and identify. Copper is a shiny substance, just looks like a penny. Galvanized and lead are a little bit different than the copper. Their color is similar. They're both silver, but a magnet will stick to galvanized where it will not to lead. So,
what number should they call if they're interested?
Well, if they'd like to reach out to us at the water shop, 647-4226, myself or one of the staff, Travis Walters or Terry Thielman, can certainly stop by and we can help identify that for you.
Summer is coming up. I'm guessing there's a little bit higher usage during the summer then?
Correct. We pump about 1 million gallons a day in the community. We are a heavy dairy industry, so our three dairy plants, Alcam and the two Schreibers, are very good customers of ours. Foremost Farms has their own private well, so they're not an everyday user of the utility. but they contribute to a significant amount of our load. We're pretty consistent year-round because of the dairy use. We don't see large spikes in the summer because the industrial load is so heavy for the community.
Okay. I don't think we had too many reminders on this winter about water main breaks, did we?
No, I did not get to talk to you quite so often this winter, Phil, and that's actually
that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. When I first started with the utility over 20 years ago, it was not uncommon to have 12 to 15 water main breaks a winter. And this last winter, we only had two breaks and one service lateral break. So it was a relatively easy winter, something, I guess, to be said for global warming. talking about breaks, that is one of the driving factors on street projects. As Todd alluded to, roots, the infrastructure is a lot of what times what determines what streets will be replaced in town. So this year on phase three of the street project, we'll be eliminating seven repair clamps that have been from breaks in the past. Phase one on 7th Street replaced eight, and last year there were actually 22 repair clamps taken out of the ground. So those sections of pipe had seen the come to the end of their useful life, and glad to have those out of the ground.
I'm sure. What's the lifespan typically on a repair clamp like that, you know?
Well, a repair clamp is intended as a temporary repair, but a lot of times they're in the ground for 15 or 20 years before you actually get to replacing the main.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing to get rid of them then, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Todd, some other things that you wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, first thing is we're in the middle of our permit renewal cycle. It's a five-year permit for our discharge permit to the Pine River. And what Steve had alluded to with the PFAS on his end, we needed that testing to get done on the source water to the wastewater plant. And then we will have new PFAS requirements for us to test both our biosolids or the fertilizer that goes to the farm fields as well as the river, water going out, the effluent going out to the river. So we'll have some new testing requirements, some new things. So just so the public is well aware that the PFAS is, it's affecting all the utilities, especially water and wastewater. But I don't foresee any problem. Again, as Steve alluded to, our industries are pretty much food grade. They're meeting FDA, you know, food and drug requirements, all that kind of thing. So we don't expect that there's going to be some type of an addition into what he's had a no detect on, that somehow through the process of going through these factories and facilities that we're going to get a big, large spike. The other thing I wanted to touch on was Wednesday night at our commission meeting, there was a rate increase approved. Our last rate increase was 10 years ago, just before we built the new wastewater plant out in Twin Bluffs. I know it's not the best time. It never is a good time to have rate increases. People don't like it. People don't care for it. But a prime example of why it was necessary is our old rate 10 years ago was built on $150,000 a year going towards street reconstruction projects. As I had mentioned, last year was one of our most expensive years for the street reconstruction project, and our share of that was $530,000. So again, we're only getting rates and revenue for $150,000, yet we're paying $530,000. That math doesn't work for very long, which is why we were starting to run into a shortfall in the wastewater utility over the last couple years. So this needed to be looked at. We had our engineering firm do a complete study. Looked at everything, and this is what they came up with. So I guess just a heads up to the community, it's going into effect July 1st. So you won't see it until you get your bill in August based on the July usage. And an average residential customer is going to see about a $13 to $14 per month increase, about $160 to $165 over the year. So again, it's real money. I'm not saying that it's not, but again, it's something that we have to do in order to keep up. Cost of inflation, cost of material, cost of labor, cost of everything has just went up drastically. If we look back to what 10 years ago was when this rate was put in, or the current rate was put in, to have this new rate is, I'm surprised it's not more in some aspects, but
you're getting a lot, though, in terms of, you know, you mentioned the upgrades and things like that.
We've got a completely, you know, new treatment plant that's already 9 years old, which is hard to believe that it's been that long. But we started out there in November of 2015. So it's new, but nothing lives forever. So even those mechanical systems, those pumps, that equipment, you know, they're starting to live their life already, where you get to 12, 15 years, a lot of that stuff is going to have to be completely replaced. Well, there's maintenance cost on it the more you use it. Some of this equipment is running 24/7. You know, it's never not working. So again, thinking the wear and tear on that, we just got to have the revenue in order to make sure we can keep things running as smooth as they are.
Are there grants involved and things like that for upgrades if you're going to maybe do some new things with equipment or not?
No, there's not so much grants out there anymore. Once we financed it and we got our large grant through USDA when we built the plant and built the process out there, what we do have is an equipment replacement fund. So part of our rate and part of our rate structure has a stockpile of money to take care of that mechanical equipment to make sure we can rebuild, replace pumps, equipment, that kind of thing. It's the stuff like roofs, you know, shingled roofs are not going to last forever. The structural integrity of some of the buildings, some of the other stuff, tankage, if some of that starts to go, that's not going to make it, and that's not part of the equipment replacement fund. So again, it's mostly that mechanical equipment. We kind of have a built-in savings account in our financial working to make sure. So again, this is also to keep that whole, as well as our bond and interest payments to USDA from that.
What about, are there grants as far as your lead replacement, the water service lead grant there, Steve?
Yes, there are. And actually, at commission meeting last night, we authorized the first step to applying for that grant. Our engineering company, MSA, will be applying for money to help the customer side where they either do have lead or have galvanized that was previously downstream of lead. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a 50% coverage for the homeowner. The homeowner would have to pay the other 50%. But galvanized pipe that's been in the ground for 50 years is not very long for its life anymore and is nearing the end of its useful life. So this will be able to help some customers in our community. That's part of why identifying those service types are so important to us that we need to do by this October, because that will identify the customers that will be eligible for this funding. And we're looking at this for 2025 construction.
Do you give them a reminder, or how do they know that they're eligible?
So based off the service surveys that we are doing this October, after I report to the DNR, there's a 30-day window where I have to notify all customers that have lead or copper services, and then we'll give them educational materials with that on if they're concerned about lead in the water, or educational materials about the future loan program.
It's a busy next 6 months or so for all of you, isn't it?
Yes. It's always busy for us, yep.
Getting stuff done, no doubt about it. One other thing about PFAS, you know, they've been in the news a lot lately, Todd, and I think where you're spreading, too, sometimes people might be concerned about what's going on in my field. You know, you've been hearing some things about that lately, but it sounds
correct.
Like...
There's other places in the state that have really... We've actually had farmers say they won't take the biosolids coming out of their wastewater treatment plant in other locales in Wisconsin, because they said until you can prove that it's not there, that whoever they're selling their milk to, the cow's eating that crop, they got to have this chain of evidence that PFAS doesn't exist. That was all brand new information to the DNR, because we just heard about this about a week ago, and some of our lawyers through an association we're in called MEG, Municipal Environmental Group, they're going to be contacting DNR staff, and they weren't aware of it. So again, that's not the way this should be working. I don't think anybody that's been testing biosolids so far, from what I was told here just a week ago, there's like two places in the state that are even measuring any PFAS in their biosolids. And it's still at such a low, low, low level that there's really no treatment for it, and it is evident there. But when you look at places like Marinette and some of these that have extreme water problems, to not have anything in the biosolids at their treatment plant is something's going right, but it's also got to be ending up somewhere, which we think is it's ending up in the groundwater around those facilities where they're using it, or the firefighting foam around Truax Field and Madison and those kinds of things. So it's not really getting into the wastewater. Again, in other places, other states, we, again, haven't heard that there's a lot that's proven to be in the sewage, but there are probably isolated cases. So, again, the testing requirements are going to be to prove that it's not there, As of right now, we don't believe that there would be any reason to think we've got it there. Our water is a no detect, and again, our industries are already regulated against using that kind of product and food grade material.
Pretty stringent testing for everybody, isn't it?
Oh, it's real stringent. Like I said, you're talking micrograms per liter instead of the parts per million or parts, you know, this is so low level. There's only a few labs around that can even test for it that low.
What do you do at the old location, the old wastewater treatment plant here in Richland Center?
Well, the old treatment plant downtown here, we had built a new building, and it kind of has the same color code as the buildings out at the new plant, which has kind of got that maroon trim on the block building, and now it's probably mostly unvisible or invisible because it's hid behind the new shed that was built for the parks and the city departments there. But that building is the main lift station, and that geodesic dome that used to be the sludge storage for us at that plant when it was operating as the treatment plant is now basically just an overflow buffer in case we have a really wet weather event, sewer breaks, something like that, where we're getting a lot of flood water in or anything, that can offload a million gallons of the flow over there. That way we're able to keep our pipe going out to the new plant smaller. At the old building, it's basically a garage. Again, it didn't make a lot of sense to move 7 miles away from that location and take the jet machine, the back trailer, the camera van, all of this equipment out there when it's still here is where the collection system is downtown. So that equipment is housed in that older building. I have a couple guys that this time of the year, again, they're starting to do that collection system maintenance. So we're manning that facility, I guess, on a regular basis with the collection system maintenance. Other than that, we've got some semis that are actually hauling waste in. One of them we've had hauling in for about 11 or 12 years, I think, now from Sunset Orchard. So they come pull in through the gate down below and dispose of that waste right there at the lift station. And then that main lift station pumps it out of town. So, again, it's used. And definitely the RV dump station is used.
Oh, I bet. I see people there all the time.
Yeah, I think there was 12 or 13 RVs dumped just on Sunday this weekend. So, again, as soon as the weather turned nice and everybody's out and about, but even in the middle of winter, it seemed like we have every sporadically now and then we still have somebody that's dumping their RV or camper. So, again, I think it's a great facility down there. We were able to redo the parking lot, the blacktop, to get RVs in and out of there. Of course, the beautiful Arboretum is right there below. It's just amazing to watch how many people are using that to walk, run, jog, exercise, dump their RVs. Again, it's just nice to keep the place looking nice down there. Even though it used to be a treatment plant.
Mm-hmm, right. So. Nice to know what those buildings are used for, though, because we drive by there all the time. So
yep.
Thanks for explaining
yep.
that. Anything else you'd like to add, Steve, this morning?
Well, I think just bear with us. Construction is always a little bit of an inconvenience for everybody. But as you drive around town, like Todd mentioned earlier, the finished product is well worth it. There will be storm drain put in with this project. The large transverse drains at 8th Street are being eliminated, and curb drains will be put in the full length of the project. So we're going to catch that water that's traveling the full length of 8th Street at the top of the hill instead of it traveling on top of the road. So that'll be good. Even in the spring with the snow runoffs, we'll notice that improvement. A little dust, a little noise, but the end product will be definitely something you'll be happy with.
Todd Fisher and Steve Krueger joining us in here. Some good information for the city of Richland Center. We'll have more coming up on The Morning Show.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Lynette from the Prescription Center. We want to thank all of our longtime friends who have put their trust in us to manage their family's health. We want to thank our increasing number of new friends who have learned just how special we treat our friends. We do realize you can go anywhere or use mail order. We want you to choose us every day. We know copays are the same for any pharmacy in town. However, we feel we provide a superior value for your dollars. If you find our prices higher, we will match prices for all medications. We check to see if any of your prescriptions have dollar off coupons from the manufacturer. These coupons actually put money back in your pocket. If your current pharmacy does not do this, give us a call. We know your time is valuable. When you call ahead, your prescriptions are ready when you stop. I guarantee you will never wait in our drive-thru. Okay, we do not have a drive-thru. The Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Boarding House Antiques in Richland Center, where you can treasure hunt in 17 rooms of antiques and gifts. There's live music at the Garden Stage every second Friday of the month, June through September. Tammy and Margie invite you to visit Tuesday through Saturday. Check out the historic Boarding House Antiques. Check them out on Facebook and their webpage. They buy antiques. 339 West Seminary Street in Richland Center, next to the depot. As our morning show continues, in the studio with us now is Marge Freeman, commander of Bauer Gunnell Dalton VFW Post 2267. So we kind of dovetail the information that Todd and Steve just talked about why the memorial event is moved this year. Good morning, Marge. How are you?
Good morning. And I'm really happy to be here and you were able to work us in.
Yeah, and there's a reason why you're moving the program this year and this year only. So there have been a lot of behind-the-scenes reworking right now this year, hasn't there?
There has been. If I may, I just want to maybe mention a little bit about the meaning of Memorial Day, some of the things we encourage people to do, and also items that maybe we should not do. Originally, Memorial Day was called Decoration Day, and it was originally for decorating the graves of flowers, wreaths, and flags. Memorial Day is to honor those who have died while they were serving or died after they served. I encourage people, if you have a flag on your property, that the night before or early morning hours before sunrise, put your flag at half staff. And if you are home or if you have somebody else that can raise the flag at noon to full staff, that is a good recommendation to do for Memorial Day in honor of those that served and died during their service or thereafter. Another item would be, you know, for your clothing, wear red, white, and blue. Or attend a parade in your area, attend a Memorial Day service, and if you have a poppy, wear your poppy that day. The poppy is the official flower for wearing on Memorial Day, whether it's a poppy by the American Legion for those when they're out and about, or a poppy by the VFW, which is considered the buddy poppy. Some of the things that I advise people, actually you should not do, you don't wish anybody a happy Memorial Day. This is not Christmas. It's a Memorial Day, which is not founded on promises of a happy new year or anything like that. Don't thank current troops. That is actually reserved for Veterans Day. Don't disregard its importance. Don't forget that Memorial Day actually does exist. It's the last Monday in May, which was designated by Congress many years ago. Don't let politics keep you from rendering respect to those that have served and died during their service or shortly thereafter. It's not a day for politics or other advertising in a parade. So if anybody is in a parade, it is strictly it should be a patriotic parade in memorial of those that have passed.
Tell me about the parade this year and how it's going to change.
Well, we had to change it, and I got kind of a notice late February that there was going to be work up at the cemetery on around 8th Street and those locales in that general area. And I've been working very closely with the city police chief and also the leadership, the mayor for the city of Richland Center, on coming up with alternatives. And there was a couple different alternatives we considered, but I was also recommended, well, how about at the Veterans Memorial Pavilion up at the park, at Crosscut Park, which I thought was a great idea. One of the other locations we considered just had a lot of high traffic issues, so this is why we chose the pavilion. And this is for an outdoor service. So with that said, our parade route has changed this year. We will not be at the old high school location. We will be down at Jefferson Street, which will be around the first and second for a parade lineup, first and second, and Jefferson, which would be just below the Jefferson, the old Jefferson School playground in that general area. We will then be, the parade lineup starts at 9:30 a.m., and hoping that the parade kickoff will be approximately 10 a.m. And working with the city police chief, they will make sure that street, the entire Jefferson Street, all the way up to the Veterans Memorial Pavilion in Crosscut Park will be lined up with no parking signs and so on, so the parade route can go in that direction. Bo Hendricks will be our MC for the day. And then immediately thereafter, we will have our Women's Relief Corps there also up at North Park, which would be about 300 feet to the right of that location. But with that said, that is the intended route, and we highly encourage for those, you know, to be lined up on that parade route on Jefferson Street, headed towards the pavilion at the park, and, you know, to turn out for the parade, and then also show up at Crosscut Park at the Veterans Memorial Pavilion and also be there for the Memorial Day services.
So you're not going downtown with the parade?
No, we are not. Okay. And I'm glad you asked that question, because I did a check on the mileage. Now, if we were at the old high school location going to the cemetery, that's 0.5 miles.
Right.
The exact same distance from the Jefferson School, or actually the Jefferson Street to the pavilion up at the park, is also around a little over 0.5 miles. So for anybody that's marching, the distance is pretty much the same. Our troop carrier should also be available for those that cannot march. So we will do every effort to make sure that's available as well. If we would have started downtown at the post office and then circled around and then come back up through probably Church Street and then down, that would be a very, very, very long distance, and then up to the pavilion. It's almost a mile. It's like 0.8, 0.9 distance, which is a long ways for those that are marching.
With the location then, Marge, you know, you're going to be able to work in the programs, you know, in the park. The water service is nearby.
Yes,
then?
Yes, yes. We will start out with obviously, this is all for outdoor service, the welcome of ceremonies. I've been working with Bo Hendricks on that. He will be the master of ceremonies. We will do an invocation by one of our local pastors, which I'll talk about on that later, then the Pledge of Allegiance, then the Master of Ceremonies will introduce the Richland Center High School band, Jeff Behrens. I've been working closely with him. Then there will be introduction of the representatives, and basically that would be there's only going to be about three or four that are going to be introduced, and that would also include our guest speaker. There will be also a student then who will be doing the Gettysburg Address, that Jeff Behrens is working with me to get a student name. And then the speaker for the day is designated as Cecil Richardson, who's a retired Air Force, and he was the Air Force retired chaplain of chaplains. I talked to him briefly, I want to say late February, and I was so glad I had the opportunity to run into him, because I've had a few other people say, oh, you took Cecil away from me. I was like, no, I beat you to it.
He's in demand.
He's in high demand, and I know he travels a lot as well. And then we will also do the closing ceremony, and then the benediction, and then we will do the national anthem And then we will do the salute to our fallen comrades, and we will have the three volleys of firing by our local military honor guard, and then also we will have taps and a moment of silence. Now, after the moment of silence, we will then divert over to near that shelter and that bridge at North Park, about 300 feet from the pavilion, and do the Women's Relief Corps water service in honor and remembrance of those that were lost at sea.
Where's the best place for people to park if they're going to be attending the service then, Raj?
Well, I know there is a small parking area there in North Park. I suppose if anybody can park along the streets up there near the Parks Department garage or any place of that location, or if they're able to walk to that location, that's an opportunity. But also on the other side of North Park, on the bridge up there, there's also a large parking area. There would be a very short walking distance for those that are able to walk. And but we had to go to a different location this year, and it's because of the construction work that's going to take place up at the around the cemetery area. Otherwise, it would have been a lot of gyrations and safety for everybody. Safety, safety, safety. And we didn't want anybody, getting hurt and making sure that we have a smooth path to the location for our Memorial Day services.
Have you made plans? I even hate to bring it up, but in the case of inclement weather.
We have. There's a lot of moving parts in all of this, and it's not just because of this year. Working with the school and the school district to make sure that the high school gymnasium is available in case of inclement weather. That did happen a few years ago. And usually around 8 o'clock in the morning is when the final determination is made. Let's say if there's a plan issue or announcements that the weather is not going to be favorable, sometimes that decision is made around 8 o'clock in the morning, working with the police chief or the school. The school will have everything lined up. They'll have seating available, bleachers and so forth, and I'll be working very closely with the master of ceremonies and anybody that's involved. If the weather is not favorable, we will be at the high school location, which is the same location as when we do our Veterans Day activities there as well. So we had put in for a good weather request many months ago, and I'm hoping that remains that way.
We'll do our best.
Oh, I know you will.
What are some other things going on that you'd like to plug on today from the standpoint of the VFW Post 2267?
Well, there is always something going on at the post level. We are always very, very, very busy. And anybody that has served in a what they call a danger zone, imminent danger zone, a combat zone, if you have, please get a hold of us and join our VFW post. We are 105 strong. Even though a lot of people are unable to make it to the meetings, membership is so important because it's not just at the post level. The decisions that we made, case in point with the state convention, there's a lot of voting that goes on, that goes all the way up to the national convention on legislation and so forth. So it's not just people show up at meetings. A lot of that information for veterans' concerns, all those things are discussed and voted on, or if they're not voted on, those concerns go forward to the state level up to the national level. There's a lot of hard work that's put in by anybody that's in a leadership position. So, but with that said, if anybody has served in a combat zone or an imminent danger zone, you are eligible to join the Veterans of Foreign Wars as long as you have a honorable discharge or a medical discharge.
You like to get some younger members. You're like most organizations,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. And I understand a lot of our young people, for those that served even Desert Storm in Iraq, Afghanistan, a lot of our younger veterans, whether they're men or women, are working full-time jobs, or they got families with young children, and they're being pulled in a lot of directions. even if you can, you know, join and attend a meeting a couple times a year, and if you cannot be active in the post, that's okay. You can still be a member. Membership is very, very important in any organization because, like I said, you know, a lot of the decisions that are made at the post level carried up to state and national, all that voting constitutes and represents those veterans that are speaking. Our VFW post goes back to 1931 under Bauer Gunnell, and those two individuals lost their lives during their service, and then we were reorganized under a second charter in 1945 under Dalton. And so Bauer Gunnell Dalton, for me and a lot of our other veterans, is actually in honor of those three that lost their lives during their service. And with that said, in memory not only of them, but also becoming a member of the post and, you know, showing up at the meetings once in a while, just being active, you know, even just a little bit is a huge help.
No doubt about it. Anything else you'd like to add today, Marge?
Well, I really appreciate you having us on. I can't think of too much more other than there's a lot of moving parts that goes on with this. You know, the planning, I've had people say, well, all you have to do is just a parade permit. Well, the parade permit does cover everybody in that parade. That is fact. But also that parade permit has to be approved by our city or our safety committee at the city level. Working with the high school band, making sure we have a student for Gettysburg Address, making sure we have a speaker, and also a flyover if they're available. You know, working to make sure we have a chaplain available for prayers, working with the city police department. So there is a lot, you know, and also the parks department, making sure that we have chairs set up, whether it's for outdoors, and then also the school concerns if we are indoors, making sure that chairs are available, you know, set up for the people coming in, for those that are attending the services. So there is a lot of moving parts to it. And I highly encourage people to be there for not only the parade. We need parade units, patriotic based, no political, and we need any type of parade units or bands. We need them there, and then also for people to attend the services, which is so important in honor of those that have served and died during their service or after they had served and passed away.
Your next big event as well, and I know you're not directly involved, but May 18th, there's a special event too.
Yes, there's a special event that's pretty much headed by the Veterans Service Office and their committee. They went through, I don't want to even venture how many hundreds or close to thousands of names they've gone through at all the cemetery locations, and to find out whether or not those individuals had the markers. And I know that there was a fair amount that they found. And that first event for the memorial, that dedication, is May 18th at 1 o'clock and 1,300 hours for the rest of us that served up at the cemetery. And I understand that Ron Fruit is the MC for that. That's going to be a wonderful day. A lot of people have been invited and encouraged to be there. Our military honor guard will be there doing the salute, because chances are, now I don't know about the individuals that they're going to honor that day, but the fact that whether or not they're Civil War veterans or maybe thereafter, there's a very good chance that they never ever had a military honor guard to honor them. And rather than guess if they did or didn't, or know if they did or didn't, it was decided that we're going to have our military honor guard there to do a salute for those and for that dedication for those memorials.
Well, we appreciate all you do, Marge, and we'll be talking to you again, hopefully not about bad weather on Memorial Day, so we can keep it outside at the pavilion then that day.
Thank you so much for your time.
You bet. Marge Freeman, commander of Bauer Gunnell Dalton, VFW Post 2267 on The Morning Show.
Hi, this is Dan Miller, Okooch Books and Libations at 130 South Main, downtown Richland Center. We've got a lot of new books in. Since I sold my old building, I got some cash and I bought a bunch. Same thing is true with wines. I'm looking for some wine shelving to expand my wine department. Okooch Books and Libations, downtown Richland Center. Always something new. I can prove it. 130 South Main, downtown Richland Center.
At the past Wednesday sale at the Mathis Farms Auction Market in Biola, calves were steady, slaughter cows stronger. Holstein bull calves sold up to 610, beef crossbred calves up to 860, with the heifer and lightweight calves 2 to 240. The 250 to 310-pound Jersey calves sold at 195, with a red steer 415 pounds at 295. 85% of the slaughter cows sold over $1.20, topping out at $1.43. 14% range from $1 to $1.20, one cow under $1. Bulls up to 142. At last Friday's feeder sale, all classes of cattle were very active. The lightweight Holstein steers sold from 250 to 3, 6 to 750 weights to 235, and 8 to 1050 Holsteins 155 to 180. Beef steers and heifers sold from $2.30 to $3, with the heavier cattle $185 to $220, crossbreds lower. Our next feeder sale will be on Friday, May 17th, and our annual beef bull sale is coming up pretty fast on Wednesday, May 29th. Contact Darren, Colton, or Jim to get your cattle on our sales list. We'll come out to your farm, give you an idea what your cattle could bring at our sale. Mathis Farms Auction Market in Biola is your local market, serving the farmers of our area for over 60 years.
Welcome to Pratt Chat. Pratt Chat is a service of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. Join us each week for a conversation with Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service for answers to questions that we're all hesitant to ask. Pratt Chat is sponsored by the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Mark Jelenic is here to talk with us about some important things coming up to kind of keep in mind. And I think we want to talk a little bit today about insurance. What's the difference between some of these insurances that we can use for funerals and different things that we need?
Sure. So there's a lot of different kinds of insurance out there. If you watch TV, you'll see some out there about final expense insurance. If you go to a local insurance office, they'll sell you traditional life insurance. And then funeral homes have pre-need insurance. And they all serve a purpose, and they all serve a slightly different purpose. They can kind of be intermingled, and a lot of times people do intermingle them, but they do have separate purposes. So if we just kind of start off with, because I'm from a funeral home, so we have pre-need insurance. And what that is for specifically is to pay for your funeral-related services. So for the funeral that you want, if you want to get a monument ahead of time, your grave opening, your lunch, your flowers. In the past, a lot of times people did funeral trust in the state of Wisconsin through a local bank, because until the mid-90s in the state of Wisconsin, you could only put money aside in a bank to prepay for your funerals. They made a change in the state law that allowed funeral homes, you to put money aside in insurance products to pay for your funerals. And the reason that this is kind of an important big change that happened is when the state changed the laws on pre-need insurance, you are now legally allowed to put money aside for flowers and lunches and grave openings. Until that change happened, you legally could not do that. The money had to be put into very specific trusts. And so then that's where the pre-need insurance, funeral insurance came into play at. So a lot of funeral homes do use it. It's very specific for prepaying for your funeral. It's also very helpful in being able to guarantee funeral services because there's an interest rate on it. It grows with inflation. So you're allowed to pay for all funeral-related expenses, not some of them. And it's held in with the funeral home, but it's held with a third party, but it meets all Medicaid standards. And that's really the biggest, most important part of it is if you go to a nursing home, no one is allowed to take this insurance policy from you. It is already protected. The government says you are allowed to have it to pay for your funeral. We will not take this money from you because it is in a pre-need insurance policy with a funeral home. Where this comes into play is, let's say you would go to a local insurance agent and buy life insurance, which is a really important thing for people to do. It helps your family, but usually you're buying traditional life insurance to give money to your family at the time of your death, not necessarily to pay for your funeral expenses, but maybe to pay for your mortgage, to be able to continue to live the lifestyle that you live. So that's usually what you buy a traditional life insurance policy for. If you end up in a nursing home, that policy is considered an asset to you. The government will tell you you are required to cash that policy in unless it's protected in very specific ways because there's cash and the state wants the cash to pay for your living to qualify for medical assistance and Medicaid. So it has a very specific purpose. The purpose it has is a really good purpose for what it is. So sometimes we use them to pay for funerals, but it kind of has to fit under different qualifications. So there's different kinds of insurance, and people think a funeral policy is the same as a traditional policy, which is the same as a final expense policy. So they all serve similar purposes, but they all serve slightly different purposes for the consumer.
You mentioned that they will get some money going, interest rates and things like that. But funeral expenses and, you know, dinners and all that stuff, that's going to go up as well.
It does. So a lot of times if you're looking at a final expense policy, which is usually what you see advertised on television, usually between about 4 and 6 o'clock in the afternoon, because that's kind of their popular.